IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
I believe that South Africans in general have bettered themselves. We care for each other. We look out for each other. And we have seen, certainly I have seen, the best of people during lockdown. We can't say the same about what's happened in America. Obviously, we don't know the nuances. We don't know all the details. But on a national level, certainly, I don't believe that that they are a leading example. I believe in many ways that South Africa is. And in fact, I've asked Rabbi Daniel Bider to talk about that exact issue. How do we best deal with disputes? It is 8:52. Rabbi Daniel Bider, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard.
So you're
very well indeed. Thank you.
Good. So you're stepping into obviously a quite a difficult conversation, because when we have these disputes on a national level or international level, they're very hard to control. Give us some context around dealing with dispute.
Okay. Well, in our tradition, we actually have some guidance as to what's a worthwhile dispute and what is not a worthwhile dispute. There's obviously no point ever in engaging in an activity which is just going to hurt you, hurt the person you're speaking to, and isn't going to do anything useful. You may as well not speak to each other if that's the case.
Or get off Twitter, I suppose, Anati. We're all going to have to get off Twitter now because, well, that's not a rabbinic advice. Let's hear what he has to say. Yeah.
Okay. There is a time when it's worth engaging with the other person, which is when, even if you have an opposing view, you can get somewhere useful which works for both of you. So the template, the blueprint for a bad machlokes, a bad argument, is actually brought in Ethics of a Father's Pirkei Avot as the famous argument between a gentleman called Korach, who challenged the authority of Moses, challenged the authority of Moshe, and it didn't work out very well for him. That's called a bad argument, and a good argument is the argument of Hillel and Shammai, two Jewish sages who beavered away at the minutiae of what the Torah was trying to tell us. And that's called a good argument. A good argument is one which is going to get you somewhere. A bad argument is going to just fizzle out and somebody's going to lose badly. So I'd like to take a little look at this gentleman, Korach. It's in this week's Torah portion, which we would be reading if we were in shul. And basically this gentleman led a rebellion. He had a crowd over there who joined him. And the idea was that he wanted to challenge the authority of Moshe. Fine. Now, if we look at what was going on there were two issues. There are often two issues which can affect, which can be found when there's a bad argument going on. There's some kind of hatred, there's some kind of dislike on a personal level of the other side, which should always set alarm bells ringing, because maybe you're arguing with them because whatever they'd say, since you don't like them, you'd adopt a contrary position. The other thing which is very important to be aware of is if you have a different narrative to the person you are arguing with. When you walk into a discussion with totally different narratives, then it's very difficult to resolve them, because so much of your viewpoint is going to be based on your narrative, on your starting position. So I'd like to spend a little more time on these nebulous ideas which I've mentioned. I think the English language actually has some useful words in this context. Korach, this gentleman Korach, had a group of people who would be described as a motley crew. Motley crew is a bit like grassy knoll. Knolls are only referred to as grassy knolls. I've never heard of a different coloured knoll. Mm. And motley seems to only ever be used in the context of crews. Motley means a group of people composed of exhibiting great diversity, according to my online dictionary. So this gentleman Korach turned up with this group of people who all wanted different things, and they challenged the authority of Moshe. Fine. And they didn't really have a coherent argument. In fact, when Ethics of Our Father says that this is the argument which doesn't work, which isn't going to, nothing's going to come of it, it was Korach and his followers who are quoted, not Korach and Moshe, because Korach and his followers each had such disparate ideas going on. So let's just talk a little bit about different narratives. What are different narratives? So classic example, it's very simple, very old-fashioned, but I'll use it anyway. Husband and wife get married. She's angry with him about squeezing the toothpaste tube at the bottom, which you're not supposed to do, you might squeeze it at the top. He's angry with her about the fact that she does it the other way around. They both walked into that position thinking the other person knows the reality, knows that the correct way to do it is their way, yet still they persist in doing it the opposite way. This sets the scene for great argument, because they're so upset that somebody with exactly the same worldview as them, or so they think, has adopted a contrary position. Tell you another idea, another example I've had. The house that I live in Israel, often you get dogs passing by, and often dog owners, because that's the way some dog owners are, feel that their dog should be able to do whatever it wants, wherever it wants. And I've come out of my house and I've said to people, I don't really want this happening here, this is my house. And they answer back to me, they say, well, this is my dog. And we're obviously looking at this situation from completely different perspectives. Because I think it's my house and your dog can do what it wants anywhere in the world. And they think, this is my dog, this is what dogs do. So we can't really have a discussion because we're starting from such different premises.
Right.
Now, Hillel and Shammai, what are Hillel and Shammai doing? They're both involved in exactly the same struggle. They're both trying to uncover the minutiae of Jewish law. They're both looking at something which the Torah was telling us, which might be a little obscure, trying to work out what it says. Pirkei Avot says, fantastic, they've walked in with the same Weltanschauung, the same way of looking at the world. They can have a sensible discussion. They both want the truth, and they don't have an answer that they want to arrive at. There's no agenda. They're both truth-seeking. Now, if we walk into arguments when we've both got exactly the same narrative, then that's clearly a very good starting point. That's clearly an excellent way to try and work out, well, you think that, I think that, I can see a problem with the way you're arguing. Can you see a problem with the way I'm arguing? We're both looking for the same thing. That's fantastic. The problem is, though, that so often it's not a Hillel and Shammai kind of scenario where you're both starting with exactly the same narrative, exactly the same set of presumptions. Normally what happens is people are walking into a situation with different narratives. And we find this quite a few times. This is very prevalent at the moment. Let me go back to my dog example, my dog and house. So, you know, what's good, what's fantastic is if people can merge their narratives to kind of do a combined narrative, and then you can actually take it forward and come up with a sensible solution. You know, I accept that your dog needs to do what it needs to do. Can you accept that my house is sacred to me? Can we accept that your dog should go somewhere completely different and do what it needs to do over there? That's not a very good example. Better note, serious example, in England, there's been a lot of, and actually in America as well, there's been a lot of destruction of statues recently. Statues have been treated most unkindly. This is based on completely narratives, on competing narratives. So if there's, you know, one person's narrative might be, this is a statue of a person who had a very evil part and was involved in lots of unpleasant stuff and should be thrown into a river. Somebody else who doesn't associate so much with the narrative behind the evil part of that person, of that statue, might take the view, this is a statue of a man which has stood unchallenged for 200 years and it did many good things for this town. It certainly should not be thrown into a river. If they could combine the narratives and come up with a kind of situation where I can accept that this statue, can you accept that this statue should not be thrown into a river? Can you accept that this statue should not occupy a prior place in this town? There could be some kind of combined narrative where you get to a situation where can we both accept that this statue should be in a museum where your narrative and my narrative can be sensibly debated, and the relative merits of this individual can be explored. So what emerges over here is that as long as we can find some kind of common ground, some kind of respectful way of relating to the other person's narrative, it's worth engaging in a dispute because you might come up with something sensible. If you can't do that, it's just going to lead to lots of heartache like we see all over the world at the moment.
I like that a lot.
I love that.
Sonati?
Combining narratives.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
You see, because I think we give ourselves so little credit that we think that we are so unable to understand the complexity and the nuance of each person and each life and parts of history. It is 9:00, Rabbi Daniel Bader. Thank you. Fascinating thought indeed.